Okay.
Here we go. Okay. So kind of like the mystery, I guess, at the end of Parshas Vayechi is Yaakov's responses to the beginning of his sons. He's not very happy with Reuven, and that we can understand because Reuven, whatever exactly happened with Bilhah back in Parshas Vayeshlach, wasn't good. He's very happy with Yehuda, which we can understand because Yehuda kind of took over the leadership, basically, especially in Parshas Miketz and then in Parshas Vayigash. The real mystery is what's going on exactly with Shimon and Levi. So we'll open up the screen share. We're going to look at the Pesukim, and then we'll begin to see some of what Chazal are going to do with the curse, the apparent curse. Oh, where is this? The apparent curse that Yaakov has for Shimon and Levi. What exactly does it entail, and what should we do with it? So let's see, screen share. Where can I find the thing? There we go. All right. Okay, so right, Shimon Levi and Pinchas, I guess that ruins the surprise of what the parallel is that we're going to see be developed over here. Can zealotry be redeemed? So Yaakov Avinu says to Shimon Levi, Shimon Levi, Achim Heim, right? They're brothers. Klei Chamas Micharei Sehem, weapons of violence is their kinship. Bisodam Al Tavo Nafshi, Bekalam Al Techad Kivodi. In their secrets, I don't want my soul to be involved. In their assembly, I don't want my honor. In their anger, they killed a man. In their will, they hamstrung an ox. Arur apam ki az. Their anger should be cursed because it is mighty. Yaakov is very careful not to curse Shimon and Levi themselves, chas v'shalom, but he definitely does curse their anger. Ve'evrasam ki kashasa. Their wrath because it was hard. Achalkem b'Yaakov, afitzem b'Yisrael. I'll divide them in Yaakov. I'll scatter them in Israel. And this is certainly what happens with Dorei Doros. If you look at what happens in the map, so Levi is scattered among the 48 cities all over Eretz Yisrael, and Shimon is put all the way down south on the border. He's kind of a buffer zone between Yehuda, who kind of absorbs Shimon, and the desert tribes down to the south.
Strange Levi becomes the Shiva.
So that's a total turnaround, right? Even though both of them, this is fulfilled, right? They both do have their land is scattered, as it were. They're not a solid block in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. How it ends up happening when we get to Vezos HaBracha is completely different. Levi becomes the Kohen, and Levi gets an extensive bracha in Vezos HaBracha. Shimon doesn't even appear. Shimon drops off the face of the earth. Moshe doesn't give Shimon a bracha. He doesn't even give Shimon a curse. Shimon doesn't get a mentioning, and so that's going to be the job for us to trace is the parallel but divergent destinies of Shimon and Levi, and how this is going to kind of help us explain their seemingly central character trait as it appears in Sefer Bereishis. And just to skip down for a second, so the main question with Yaakov's curse is it's a little bit late because back when Shimon and Levi wiped out the city of Shechem, so at the time Yaakov was very angry with them, and he says, "You've exposed me. I'm extremely vulnerable. This is a reckless thing to do." Shimon Levi responded, "Vayamru hachazona yaaseh es achosenu. Shall our sister be dealt with like a harlot?" And that's the end. It seemed like Shimon and Levi had the best of the argument. Yaakov didn't respond to what Shimon and Levi said. They said, "Look, we're going to do nothing. What do you want us to do? We got to do something." So we took action. We took revenge. We wiped out the enemies. We saved our sister. What would you have us do? Sit on the sidelines? That's not going to be viable. A very firm, clear, principled, and bold line. Yaakov has no comeback. All of a sudden now, decades and decades later, what was that, five parshios ago? It was an age ago that this happened. At the end, Yaakov from his deathbed has a comeback when Shimon and Levi can't respond to him. Why was Yaakov not saying this then? Why saying it now? What changes between Parshas Vayishlach, where Shimon and Levi seem to get the best of the argument, and Parshas Vayechi, when all of a sudden Yaakov Avinu comes back with a vengeance? Where was this Yaakov before? So that's just the central difficulty that explodes out of the Pesukim themselves. The way for us to begin to attack this, to see what Chazal are seeing beneath the surface, and as we learn more of it, we'll have to see why they see more of this beneath the surface, is the comments of Rashi right here on the spot, quoting from the Midrashim. So when Yaakov says, "Bisodam al tavo nafshi," my soul should not come into their secret. So what was this? Says Rashi, "Ze masa zimri." This is anticipating the event which is going to happen in a few hundred years with Zimri and Cusbi, the princess of Midian, where at Shittim, right, the sin of the Baal Peor, the Jews are going to have relations with the Midianite or Moabite women, maybe both of them, headlined by Zimri, the Nasi of Shevet Shimon. So he says, this already is what Yaakov Avinu is anticipating way back here in Parashas Vayechi. That's the secret, whatever was happening inside that tent. Continues Rashi, Kishiniskabsu Shivto Shel Shimon, Lahavi Esha Midyanis of Ne Moshe. When all of the tribe came together to bring that woman towards Moshe, Vamru, Im Tamar Zo Asura Bas Yisro Mi Hetiralach. So the Gemara describes, we'll look at it soon. They say, if this woman is prohibited to Zimri, how dare Moshe marry a Midianite woman? So Rashi, yeah, Yaakov says, Al Yizacher Shemi Bedavar. I don't want my name to be involved. Yaakov says, I want to have nothing to do with this. That's going to happen in Parshas Balak, Parshas Pinchas, and Sefer Bamidbar. Don't get me involved. Zimri ben Salu Nasi Beis Av LeShimoni, as the Torah says, he was the Nasi going back to Shevet Shimon. The locus of Ben Yaakov. We do not trace Zimri's lineage back one final step to take him all the way up to Yaakov. So, okay, that's a little bit strange, right? Like, we wouldn't really expect the Torah to tell us Zimri's lineage all the way to Yaakov. It's classic. You tell me Zimri ben Salu, that's his name. He's the Nasi of Shevet Shimon. That's his tribe. And that's it. Why would you tell me what the Ben Yaakov, Ben Avraham? It doesn't really seem to emerge from the Pesukim. So we would like to know, where are Chazal getting this from, that Yaakov Avinu wants to place Zimri and the whole episode of Midian and Baal Peor in front of us here in Parshas Vayechi, right? The parallel we're going to have to unpack this week is going to be a little bit different than many of the ones we've done until now. Because many of the ones we've done until now, if not all of them, we were able to find many, many textual connections between the Pesukim. Right? And Chazal were kind of noticing those. And then you begin with some of the textual pieces, and then you can expand from that to the thematic pieces, you know, some of the more conceptual things that they have in common. Here, there's not really any clear piece in the Pesukim per se that you would say, ah, this is exactly what Chazal are focusing on. The fact that it doesn't mention Yaakov's name in Parshas Pinchas, it shouldn't mention his name. It shouldn't mention his name at all. Now, the continuation of Yaakov's curse, where he says regarding Bekalam al techad kvodi, so that is a reference to Korach. We're not going to talk about Korach for the most part tonight. There, the diuk is on more reasonable grounds, because there, if you look the next Rashi, so he says Korach was called Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahas ben Levi. So there, you might think that it would actually call him by his last name. And sure enough, in Divrei Hayamim, where the Pesukim there are all about lineage, it actually does say Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kas, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. So there, it's more reasonable to say that that Yaakov is specifically holding the line and saying, I do not want my name mentioned in the context of Korach. Unfortunately, Korach is not the topic of tonight's shiur. We're focusing on the first half, on the half of Zimri, which doesn't really seem to be coming out of the Pesukim. So why are Chazal so insistent on raising that us for here right now? All right, those are the two questions I think to put on the table. Question one again, Yaakov's bracha itself, his klala itself, isn't fair because he should have said it years ago when it was actually relevant. Why does he only come back now in Parshas Vayechi, not back in Parshas Vayishlach? Problem two is this Rashi, Yaakov is saying far off in the distant future, the event of Zimri, which doesn't really seem to have anything at all to do with Shimon and Levi.
As Yaakov's personality,
the suggestion that Yaakov should have, yeah, but I mean, but if the suggestion is that if we're going to suggest that Yaakov doesn't rebuke, so why is he rebuking him from his deathbed? No, he doesn't seem welcome. Doesn't seem. Does he rebuke anybody really until his deathbed? I don't know. I mean, Lavan, I guess, but that's basically it.
What did he tell Yar Yosef about the dreams?
Yeah, what did he tell? Well, he's what do you call that, a rebuke? I don't know. Okay, so let's focus in and let's proceed. This, I have one other source sheet, but I'm afraid the printer here didn't do a stellar job. So here we're up to we're right up to here. Final page one, no problem. Welcome to your seat. You're comfortable. Great to have you. I'm going to take off that coat because it's about 85 degrees in here.
Sorry.
You might want to take off that coat because it's about 85 degrees in here.
Yeah, yeah. It's very misty out.
Yeah. It's a big fog. You probably feel like you're back at home.
Yeah, I'm not
fog. Okay. All right. Good. So anyway, right, those are our two questions. And now let's begin to tackle them. So what we need to begin to do is first just get a working reminder. We'll take a couple of minutes to refresh our memory of the actual story of Zimri at the end of Parshas Balak, at the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. And then we're going to look to see how Chazal and the Gemara and Sanhedrin treat that story. From that discussion, we'll see Chazal making a number of references to Shimon and Levi, and we'll come out, I think, with this whole thing with a much more careful and and sharp understanding of what Shimon and Levi did right, what Shimon and Levi did wrong, and how that can be repaired, how that can be perfected. You know, it's not just completely throwing out the approach that they had. It's understanding how to redeem the zealotry that they showed defending their sister Dina. It's one thing for Yaakov to say that it was inappropriate the way they did it, but we'll see how Pinchas is able to redeem that zealotry. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Chafei, right after, let's remember, all of the times that Bilam tries and fails to curse Bnei Yisrael. So Bnei Yisrael are in Shittim, and all of a sudden they begin to stray after the daughters of Moab. Chazal explained that this was not a coincidence. Bilam HaRasha advises them to go in this direction. That's why later on in the battle that Bnei Yisrael fight against Midian, Bilam is together with Midian, even though it's not where he's from. Okay, so all of a sudden the Jews are sitting with the daughters of Moab. Inevitably, when there's intermarriage, or when there is at least sexual mingling between the Jews and non-Jews, Avodah Zarah follows very, very quickly, which we have already in Pasuk Beis. So the Jews are worshiping Baal Peor. They're being enticed by the Moabite women. It is an absolute disaster, an absolute catastrophe. Moshe Rabbeinu begins executing Jews left and right. It's like we're back in the days of the golden calf. And then we have this crisis where a man comes from Bnei Yisrael. Torah doesn't tell us his name. He takes a woman from Midian, and he's going to sleep with this woman in public. No, everyone knows it's going to happen. Everybody is paralyzed. Nobody knows what to do. Along comes Pinchas. He sees in Pasuk Zion, this very mysterious line, you see, Vayar, he saw. He comes out, he jumps up, he takes a spear, he kills both of them. And then the Torah tells us that after this happens, the plague, which apparently had been raging, we weren't told about it until now, the plague is ended. 24,000 Jews had died in the plague. So this is really absolute catastrophe, a spiritual catastrophe, a physical catastrophe. And then in the end, Torah tells us that Pinchas ended my wrath. Bekano Eskenasi, the old translation, he was very jealous for my sake. We'll see. Rashi says you should not at all translate this as jealousy. Jealousy is bad. So it would not make a lot of sense for on many levels. It would not make sense for Hashem to give Pinchas a Yeshikach for being jealous of my jealousy. Hashem is not jealous, and Pinchas is not jealous. Jealous is not good. So Pinchas gets the reward of peace. And then we're told, it's really interesting, that like as a twist, oh, the name of the man, the anonymous man, who weren't told until now, in Pasuk Yudal, we're finally told he is Zimri ben Salu, the Nasi of Shimon. And the woman was Kazbi Bas Tzur, who was one of the princes of Midian. And if he's a prince, then his daughter is a princess. Okay. Yeah, right. Moab and Midian are teamed up. The entire Bilam story, Moab and Midian have been operating together. That's the basic story. Now, it is definitely something against Pinchas from Sheva Levi. And we will see how seriously Chazal go in on this when we get to the Gemara Sanhedrin in just 1 minute. But before we do, since this is going to be critical, the whole theme of the shiur is the idea of zealotry, which often translated as kinna. So we should know what actually Rashi says the word literally means. So bikano is kinasi. Remember, the old translation said that it was jealousy. So Rashi says that is not the case. What does it actually mean? He says, binikmo es nikmasi. So jealousy here refers to revenge. Kol lashem kina hamit charel in kom nikmas. Hold on a second, you guys are black. Nikmas damar. I don't know old French, so I don't know what this word means. I don't know if anybody in the shir knows old French. And for raiment, I don't know. So I bet I should look that up before. We'll blame the fast day. But kina, he says, is revenge. So revenge is what Pinchas was doing. He was avenging on behalf of Hashem. Now, jealousy is basically always bad. Revenge is almost always bad. It's very dangerous. I mean, Torah says, lo siko, right? Do not take revenge. But there are times when revenge is warranted. We have to go fight back against Amalek. You know, that's just one prominent example. There are times you have to strike back against your enemies. But this idea of revenge, when it is going to be okay, when it is not, if we're defining kinna, right, as like a righteous vengeance, is what Rashi says Pinchas was doing. He was showing righteous vengeance. And the question is going to be, how can we handle that? Because it is something which can so easily get out of hand. So why is that in Pinchas' case, it's going to be okay? And what can we actually learn from Pinchas? Now, the Gemara uses this phrase of kanaim, avengers or zealots. It's in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin. Very, very important halacha. A very mysterious halacha, which hopefully we'll be able to understand by the end of the shiur tonight. Cool. The Mishnah says, Hagone v'sakisva, somebody who steals utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, the makalel v'kosim, someone who curses in a certain way, the boel aramis, and somebody who sleeps with a non-Jewish woman, kana'in pogin bo. So the zealots kill him. Says Rashi, who are the zealots? B'nei Adam, I do not know what that word means, to be honest. Scharin, I know what that is. Miskan in kinaso shel makom. So people who have this, right, this righteous vengeance for Hashem, for the makom. Poganbo, oh, kshirin, it's a typo. It's a typo. That should be B'nei Adam kshirin. It was not crazy. So, right, upstanding people, Rashi says, are these kanayin. Hamiskan in kinaso shel makom. They are perpetrating these zealous, right, vengeance for Hashem. Poganbo, ba'osa, shah, shiroin, esamase. They can kill the person at the moment that they see the event happening. If they see the person engaged in intercourse with the Gentile, they can strike. Avala achar mikan, afterwards, ein misaso mesur lebeznin. This is not a capital crime. It is not on the books. If you look at the Mishnah, which goes through all the Mishnah Sanhedrin, which tells you, here are the people who get this misa, and the people who get this form of death, and this form of death. This doesn't appear. It's not on the books. Why? Because this is not, technically speaking, a capital punishment. It is a very, very, very mysterious halacha where in the moment they can be killed by a private citizen, but afterwards they can't be. It's a very funny halacha. We have something a little bit similar, the phenomenon of the rodef, right, where someone is trying to kill someone else, so you, a private citizen, can shoot them. We know about that. In certain cases, somebody wants to kill somebody, somebody wants to rape somebody, someone is invading your house. You, as a private citizen, have the right to kill them. So machlokes, whether you're saving the victim or whether you're saving the potential sinner, but you're allowed to kill that person. And here, you're not, it's no skin off your back if the person is stealing from the Beis HaMikdash, if he's going to be with a non-Jewish woman. Rather, it's this idea that for whatever reason, this is not on the books as one of the chiyuve misa, but you are allowed to do this. Says Rashi, where does this come from? Halacha lemoshe misinai hu. Say halacha lemoshe misinai. Very, 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 very funny halacha. Okay. Now, the classic example in the Torah of the Kanan Poganbo, who does this, is Pinchas. This is exactly what Pinchas does to Cusbi and to Zimri. So, because of this is how the Gemara gets into its discussion of that whole event. If you read the story carefully, the way Chazal present it, we'll see a number of times that Chazal are weaving Shimon and Levi, that old issue from our Parsha and from Parsha's Vayishlach, into the story of Shimon. We need to understand why. So it begins. I suppose. So even if we Alan's pointing out that Shimon and Levi back in Vayishlach did not wipe out Shechem in the moment, they specifically did so 3 days later, as opposed to Pinchas, who takes immediate action. Now, they didn't really, okay.
Against
the very same tribe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. Now, let's hold up on the comparison. I want to read the Gemara, and then we'll begin to compare the two events as they appear in the Pesukim. But first, we should just notice that Chazal are very insistent. And once we point it out, we'll see how it's going to come up in paragraph after paragraph. So we need to read at least some of this story here in source number 4. So the Gemara says, "Vayomer Moshe al Shoftei Yisrael." Right. So Moshe told the judges in Israel to execute the people who are worshiping the Baal Peor. And then all of a sudden, there was this whole episode with this man from Shimon who came. So says the Gemara, here's what was happening in the background. Halach Shivto Shel Shimon, the tribe of Shimon. And it's not just one or two people. For whatever reason, the entire tribe. Shimon is the, it's like he's back, right? Shimon reincarnated. The whole tribe goes to their Nasi, Etel Zimri ben Salu. Amrulo, Hing Danadini Fashos, Vati Yoshe Beshosek. They're killing us out there, and you are not doing anything. What does he do? So he goes to, skip a little bit, he goes to Kuzbi, the princess of Midian. Amar La, third line of the first paragraph. Hashmili, listen to me. He makes a proposal. Amrlo, Kuzbi is not sure that Zimri is good enough for her. She says, Bas Melachani, I'm a princess. V'chein Tzivali Avi, my father commanded me, Lo Tishmi El Legalo Shabahem. You should only be with the greatest of them. Now, who was the greatest of the Jews at the time in Parshas Balak? Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of Sheva Levi. So that's pretty ambitious of Kuzbi to think that she's going to get Moshe Rabbeinu to fall. So Zimri says, Amr Allah, Afhu Nasi Shevetu. Moshe is not the king. He's not the Malach. He's the leader of Shevet Levi. Velo od Elashe, Hu Gadol Imenu. My Shevet is greater than his. Shehu Shein Lebeten, Hu Shlishi Lebeten. Shimon is the second born, and Levi is the third born. So already in this paragraph, again, none of this is in the Pesukim at all. In this paragraph, Chazal are taking the story of Zimri and Kuzbi, and they are bringing in Shimon and Levi. And what had been the ultimate alliance in Parshas Sefer Bereishis, Shimon and Levi, Achim Heim, they are brothers, all of a sudden here it's becoming a total bifurcation. Shimon, Levi are at loggerheads. He's the Shlishi Lebeten, I'm the Sheni Lebeten, this conflict between the two Shvatim. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Pinchas saw. What exactly was it that Pinchas saw? So the Gemara says, he remembered, he saw what was happening. He saw the event here with the halacha. This happens all the time. Something that's like kind of hazy in your mind. And then all of a sudden you see something, you knew I had an errand I had to run. And then you can't remember what it is. And then you open up the pantry and it's like, oh my gosh, there's no breakfast cereal. That's what I was supposed to do. So the Gemara says that's basically what happens with Pinchas. There's some foggy halacha you remember learning from Moshe Rabbeinu many, many years ago. Now he sees what Zimri is doing with Kuzbi. He says, oh my gosh, this is exactly the Gemara, the Mishnah Sanhedrin of Kana and Poganba, Baal Aramis, Befar Hasiaf. Somebody is having relations with a non-Jew in public. So that's exactly the halacha of Moshe Sinai. Amalo, Achi Avi Abba, my great uncle. Because Pinchas is Moshe's great nephew. Lo kach ni maratani britut chamei Har Sinai. Isn't this what you taught me? We came down from Har Sinai. Abola sanachris Kana and Poganba. That if somebody is doing this, so he should be killed on the spot. Moshe says to him, Krana de Igrasa you, Liu Parvanka. You read the letter, you should do what it says in the letter. So good. He didn't ask for permission. He just said, am I remembering correctly what I heard in Shir? And Moshe said, yes, and since you remembered, you should be the one to take action. Okay. Now the Gemara has an important line. Shmuel Amar, Ra'a She'in Chachma, Ve'in Tvuna, Vein eitzel neged Hashem. No wisdom or advice in such a situation like this. Very important line. Kol makom sheyesh chil Hashem, in cholken kavod l'rav. Whenever there's a desecration of the name, we put aside the honor of the master. Now it happens to be, Pinchas is not the first person to decide there's a chil Hashem happening, and therefore we need to put aside the honor of the senior person. That's exactly what Shimon Levi did to Yaakov Avinu. He said, they went ahead and did, well, they spoke back to him afterwards. They spoke back to him afterwards. They said, it's not a time to have respect for Yaakov Avinu. It's not a time to have respect for Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a time to get up and myself do what needs to be done. And we can sense that this is definitely a very dangerous tool, right? We're dealing with very explosive material over here. But once again, the situations are kind of strikingly similar. The next paragraph brings the two Shvatim, the theme of the Shvatim again. So now Pinchas has to get in. The problem is Zimri is the Nasi, so he has pretty good security, and Pinchas is one guy. So how's he going to get there? So Gemara says, so he took a spear, right, and he kind of hides it under his shirt, and he pretends that it's a walking stick. Kaven Shigia Eitzel Shivtah Shal Shimon, so he gets to the tribe of Shimon, Amar, Heichan Matzinu Shashivtah Shal Levi, Gadol Mishal Shimon. What have we seen? That Levi is greater than Shimon. And they say, Hanichulo, let him come in. Afu lasos tarchav nichnas. He's also coming in because of his desires, which he wants to give into. Once again, we're seeing the Gemara putting Shimon and Levi together. It's not, you know, was that clear in the Psukim? Not really, not at all, honestly. Torah didn't even tell us what Shevet Zimri was from until the very end of the story. But Chazal are all in on this, all in on Shimon and Levi. It's almost not Zimri and Pinchas. You could read the Gemara and you could think that it's like Shimon versus Levi. And then finally, cherry on top, icing on the cake, after Pinchas kills the two of them. So the way the Gemara describes it is, the Pasuk just said he killed them and then the plague ended. The Gemara fills in all the gory details. Ba v'chavtan lifnei hamakom. Pinchas comes, he has the two of them on his, like a shishkabam on his spear, and he plants them before Hashem. He throws them on the ground before Hashem. Amar lefana, Ribono shel Olam, al elu yiplu yipalu esrim ma'arba elef miyisrael. Because of what these people did, you're going to kill 24,000 Jews. Shenemar v'yu ha'meisim ma'geifa arba esrim elef. Where do we get this from? Where do we get this from? That Pinchas is being a mechutzah and saying, how could you do this? Haynu d'chsev v'yamod Pinchas v'yfalel. So the Torah says that Pinchas stood and he was mifalel. Now we know how to say daven in Hebrew. Yispalel. So he wasn't davening, he was vayfalel. What's the difference? What exactly does this mean? So Amar Rabbi Elazar, vayispalel o ne'amar ala vayfalel. It doesn't say he davened, it said he was mifalel. What does that mean? Judgment. Plilim, judgment. It's as if Pinchas judged his creator. It's pretty bold. Bold enough that the angels want to push him away. Fikshu, what? The story says, vayam Pinchas vayfalel. Well, this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Yeah, this is Gemara in Sanhedrin. Thank you. Yeah. Bikshu Malachi Asharis Ladachbo. Malachim want to push Pinchas away. Amar Lahan, Hashem says to Malachim, Hanichu Lo, let him be. He's entitled to stand where he is. He can pray that he wants to pray. Why? Here's the key line. Kenai ben Kenaihu. He's a zealot, the son of a zealot. Meshav Chema ben Meshav Chemahu. The one who undoes wrath, the son of one who undoes wrath. Now, who are these people? And to the second one first. The undoer of wrath, the son of one who undoes wrath. So Rashi says this is Aaron HaKohen, referencing the plague in Parshas Korach. What happens after Parshas Korach, where the Jews keep on complaining and keep on rebelling? So finally, a plague breaks out. Moshe tells Aaron, take the ketores, come into the middle of the camp. And that's what Aaron does, the plague ends. We can understand that link that Chazal see. We can understand the link between Aaron, who ends a plague, and Pinchas, who ends a plague. I put both passages down right below. You can see both cases. The key piece was Vate Atzar Hamagefa. Pasuk Yud Gimel, the first paragraph by Korach, and and pasuk ches in the paragraph of Parshas Bala. The paragraph is ended, and basically what Chazal say is they portray Pinchas as doing with the bodies of Kuzbi and Zimri exactly what Aaron does with the Ketores. So Aaron takes Ketores and he runs out into the middle of the Machane and he plants the incense down to form a division between the living and the dead. Chazal see Pinchas, the grandson of Aaron, as following in the exact same footsteps, except for him, instead of the sweet-smelling Ketores being what he plants down as a barrier between the living and the dead, it is the bleeding bodies of Zimri and Kuzbi.
So
he stops the plague that Hashem sends after the Jews rebel. In the one described right here, right? The Negev comes out from Hashem in Parak Yud Zion. So say Bamidbar, Parak Yud Zion. It's right. If you have the source sheet, it's right there on page number 3. Yeah. Okay. Also good. Right. So the link between Pinchas and Aaron is provocative enough. Where one is the ultimate man of peace, Aaron Cohen with Ketores, he's wearing big day kahuna, very noble spiritual moment. And then his grandson, who's, you know, with a spear and killing, but Chazal see it as fundamentally accomplishing the same thing. That's really important. Then who is the Kenai ben Kenai, the zealot, the son of the zealot? So Rashi says, this is Mishevet Levi, Shekina b'masa Dina. Levi was zealous in defense of his sister, Dina. Pinchas is zealous in defense of Bnei Yisrael. Tichsev hachazone yasas hachosenu. The line that Levi said to his father, to Yaakov, shall our sister remain like a harlot? Apparently that's being celebrated. We're taking that piece of Levi's DNA, and Pinchas is using it, and this is being celebrated. So the Yisrael Chazal, in piece after piece, in the reconstruction of the story of Zimri and Pinchas, they turn it into Shimon and Levi, the two Shvatim going head-to-head, and then at the end, they identify the zealotry of Pinchas as coming from two fascinatingly, radically divergent places. Aaron, the Rodev Shalom, the Oev Shalom, the Rodev Shalom, and Levi, who I thought in our parasha we said was bad, what he did to Shechem, all of a sudden here, we're identifying the good in.
Now,
what? So that's what we're going to talk about. That's where does Shimon go wrong? That's exactly what we got to talk about now, right? Now, if we, like, where is this all coming from? There are no words. There are no specific textual pieces, as we said, that we can identify, like we've done in previous shiurim, to understand why Chazal are putting these two stories together. Well, all we have really is the conceptual piece. We take a step back, and what do we have? We have two stories about intermarriage, where intermarriage is threatening the very integrity of Bnei Yisrael. We have the member of the royal family specifically being involved in like spearheading the charge. The way that Chazal understand the Bamidbar story, that Bilam was the one advising, why don't you actively pursue intermarriage with Bnei Yisrael as the way to undo them? That really links us to exactly what Chamor says to his city when he tries to pitch the intermarriage idea. He says, we're going to intermarry with them, and then we will be able to take over all their stuff. Both Chamor and Bilam, for different reasons, but both of them realize that the Achilles heel Bnei Yisrael have is Gilui Arayos. So you can persecute them day and night. You're not going to kill them. Paro is going to kill the babies, enslavement, anything you want. It's not going to move the needle whatsoever. Intermarriage? They're going to collapse like a house of cards. Is what Chamor realizes. Is what Bilam realizes. So it's not. It's again, right? That's. We have the royalty, we have just the reality of intermarriage, and we have the specific advice. So kind of those three pieces are there just enough for us to begin to put the stories together. Now, there's another piece which suggests that it was not Chazal, we're not the only ones who were thinking of the story of Shimon and Levi and Dina and Shechem when looking at what's happening here. fact, it seems likely that Bilam himself had the story of Dina and Levi and Shimon in mind. Why do I say that? Because of the comment of Rashi, which is absolutely the Peshat in the Pesukim. The Torah counts Bnei Yisrael twice in Sefer Bamidbar, once in Parshas Bamidbar, and once in Parshas Pinchas. Both of those are on the verge of entering Eretz Yisrael. Just the spin of the spies intervened, and so they had to be delayed by 38 years. What's the population of Sheva Shimon? So in source 7 in Parshas Bamidbar, Perek Beis, we're told that Sheva Shimon is comprised of 59,000 Jews. In Parshas Pinchas, in source number 8, we're told that Pinchas has dropped to 22,000 Jews. So how did that happen? They're the only tribe that has such a dramatic decrease. Everyone else is basically the same. A little increase, a medium increase. Shimon plummets from 59 to 22. So what is happening over here? So explains Rashi, it must be that all of the 24,000 casualties of the plague in Shittim with Baal Peor were from Shevet Shimon. Nirisha kol esrim arba elef naplu mishifto shel Shimon. That's the only way we can account for the fact that you would have such a radical collapse in their population. Why should they die more than anybody else? Must be that they're the only one. Now, how could that be? How could that be that only Sheva Shimon wasn't? Right, so what does it mean? Does it mean that every single So it's like what? It's like half the population of Sheva Shimon? More than half. Yeah, it's a wild, wild percentage. So am I supposed to think that 11 Shvatim were Tzadikim Gemurim and 50% of Shevet Shimon were terrible, were Rishayim? Does that make sense? It's totally unreasonable. Right? It can't be. You want to say that they're not all on the best level. It could be that one Shevet was the weak level. But to such an extreme that all the casualties come from one Shevet, it can't be that that is just because of the spiritual weakness of that Shevet. I don't buy it. It can't be. So what does that have to be? It must be that Shevet Shimon has all the casualties because they were the only Shevet which was targeted. It's the only possibility which makes any sense. Now, okay, why would that be? Why would Bilam advise Midian and Moab to only target Shevet Shimon? Now, part of the answer could be he has limited resources to deal with. Moab and Midian are both smaller nations than Bnei Yisrael. Remember, the reason why Balak is panicking in the whole story there is because he looks at the 600,000 Jews and he's like, they're going to lick me up. They're so much bigger than me. We're like a small loser nation scratching out an existence on the dry side of the Jordan River. And now this massive Bnei Yisrael comes in. So it could be that he has limited resources to deal with and he has to deal with them in a very strategic manner. That makes sense. Okay, fine. But still, why of all of the Shvatim target Shimon? Why target Shimon? And the most reasonable answer is, because he says, well, I'm trying to do the Hamor playbook, right? Or trying to use intermarriage here to collapse Bnei Yisrael. Well, last time this happened, I know exactly who are the people who were zealous and vigorously attacked and fought back against the whole project. It was Shimon and Levi. So what can I do? How can I stop that from happening this time around? How can I stop the members of the tribe of Shimon from raging around the camp with swords and spears and killing anybody who tries to do this? How can I stop them from being the Kanan Pogan Bo? Very simple. If I entice them directly. You know, it's one thing for them to be on the sidelines watching other people. It's easy to keep your moral principles when you're watching the enticement happen. When you're watching the enticement, you can say, that's terrible, I'm going to take action. I'm going to be the Kanan Poganbo. But when you are the one whose Yetzer Hara is being targeted, then it's much more difficult. So Bilam advises target Shevet Shimon directly. What? Why not Levi? Two reasons. Number one, they're not accessible. They're in the middle of the camp. You know, they're with Moshe Rabbeinu. And he's probably also figured, accurately, by the way, because this is how it happens, they've gone soft. They've become clergy. They've become rabbis. You know, Shimon, they're the fighters. They're on the outside of the camp. Levi, they're all Leviim and Kohanim. You know, so I can't. Exactly. So he logistically can't reach them because the way the camp is set up, they're on the inside of the camp. Remember, they're right. There's all the Shvatim are on one side, on one surrounding Machanesh Yisrael. Then you have Machane Levia, and then Machane Shechina. So you can't reach them. And even if he could, he might think that that's they're no longer the threat. And they're not, by the way. Because what happens? What happens when he when the news is comes to Moshe Rabbeinu? What's Torah say? All the Shemi Levi is crying by the tent. They cry. They don't do anything. They cry. But they don't pick up a sword. They don't pick up a spear. They cry. You know, they remember the tochacha of Yaakov Avinu, who yelled at them for being angry, and they're paralyzed by it. You know, it's like Shevi Levi did too much tshuva. You know, one Sheva Shimon doesn't do enough tshuva. Shevi Levi, they did too much. You know, they're paralyzed by whether it's by Yaakov's tochacha, whether it's because they've gone soft, but they do not take action. And Shevet Shimon, the targeted Shevet, the enticed Shevet, completely collapses. Okay, now we can get to the key for Pinchas, the key for Shimon and Levi, and the key for this whole halacha of Kanaim Pogin. I'll start with the halacha because it goes clearest out of the halacha, and then in applying it to the cases in Tanakh, we can see how it's going to work. The Gemara says a very, very, very shocking halacha about Kanaan Pogimel. Let's remember, Misha says, halacha l'moshe v'sinai, if you see somebody engaged in public intercourse with a Gentile, you can kill them on the spot. You see somebody stealing utensils from the base of Mikdash, you can kill them on the spot. Gemara says, take Zimri and Pinchas. So Pinchas took the spear, and he tried to, and he killed Zimri. Let's say, God forbid, Zimri had seen Pinchas coming. He whips out his own spear and he kills Pinchas on the spot. So what do we say? Is Zimri going to be convicted of murder or is he going to be... So the Gemara says that Pinchas is considered Rodin. And Zimri is allowed to... If Zimri would kill him, he couldn't be punished. Now hold on a second. Let's say we have a case of a Rodin. Let's say, you know, Reuven is chasing after Shimon to try to kill him. And then Levi comes in to stop the Rodef. So he comes in to try to kill Reuven. Can Reuven the Rodef kill Levi? Can Reuven say, well, you're trying to kill me, so I'm going to kill you? Of course not. It's absurd. Levi is only killing him because he's a Rodef. The Rodef can't kill the guy who's going after him. So why on earth is Zimri able to turn around and kill Pinchas? It's a very, very, very difficult halacha to understand. So the Afike Yam, Rav Michal Rabinowitz, who's one of the classic Lipish Achronim from the generation right before World War II, was killed in the Shoah. It's a classic, classic sefer. So he has an idea, and then Rav Moshe Feinstein, we'll see, develops the same idea. So Afike Yam asks, he says, Devri Hashas Tzrichamiyam. It's very difficult halacha. Kevad halacha Moshe Mesinai, Debo Arames Kanaan Pogimbo. Rashi told me it's a halacha l'moshe v'sinai. It's a law on the books that the Kanaan can kill him. Eich nikra Pinchas Rodev. He's not a Rodev. He has a license to kill. He has a license. What he's doing is legal. Rodev is illegal. Says that Pikayam. Ulay mishum dedavka ba'osa l'kanei kinas Hashem Rashi l'hargo b'shas ma'ase. Ablo mitam acher. He's only allowed to kill if he is doing so, l'kanei kinas Hashem. He has to have pure motives. If the motive is he's acting out of true vengeance for Hashem, that's acceptable. Any other motive, unacceptable. Ve'abochin libo suyodea im la'akel ola kalkalos. Right? Hashem knows what the man's intent is. V'alkein ha'kasav made al Pinchas b'kenos kenasi. The Torah tells us, Pinchas had the proper motivation. Aval Zimri, ena mechuyev lahamino bazeh. L'gabav, hayanachshav kerodif. Zimri doesn't know, can't read the man's mind. Zimri's not obligated to be down the kaf sofus for Pinchas. So Pinchas Zimri can say, I don't know if you're acting out of proper motivations or improper motivations. And if your motivations are improper, your entire zealousness is illegitimate. There was idolatry and idol. There was harlotry and idol worship, but not correct. But not in this. Not in the case of Zimri. Not in the case of Zimri and Cosby though. Zimri and Cosby was exclusively harlotry. Exclusively harlotry. What? What says Israel? Yeah, it was a bad. It was a bad situation. It's not good. Correct. Right. So Afik Eyam tells us that the halacha of Kana and Pogimbo only applies if you have pristine motives. Otherwise, there is no license to kill whatsoever. The person is going to be defined as a murderer. And that's why the halacha is the Rasha, who's in the middle of the act, can treat the guy as if he's a rodeh, because he doesn't have to presume favorable intentions. If you look up for a second at source 9, Rav Moshe Feinstein says the exact same thing. Says this whole license is only given to the kanai. What did Rashi say the kanai was? Bnei Adam Ksheirim. However, says Rav Moshe, the second line, Imhu lekavana acheres, if he is killing for any other intention, Hare eno kanai. We don't call him this upstanding kanai. V'lo hu tarlo, it's not allowed. Umemela hu rotseach mamish, it will be murder. So the exact same act, killing Zimri with the proper motivations, that's acceptable. That's even maybe celebrated. Killing him with the improper intentions, murder. Rotseach mamish shuchayev misa be'etzem. Fundamentally, he's liable to the death penalty. Kefi she'adua, klapishmaya. Hashem knows. Hashem knows the motivations. Other people don't. So Moshe and Afik Eyam are saying the exact same thing about the case of the Kanaim Pogimba. And now here is the key when it comes both to Shimon and Levi and when it comes to Pinchas. When we have a case of righteous vengeance. So the Rambam tells us that anger is an emotion that we want to avoid as much as possible. Be extreme in your avoidance of anger. Anger is the most dangerous emotion. You know, we all can identify with that. We've all done things when we were angry and then we calm down and we can't believe that we did when we were angry. It destroys our intellect. Very, 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 very dangerous. The most dangerous form of anger is the righteous anger, because then we can do whatever we want and we rationalize it by saying, oh, I'm doing it for a good reason. Hyper dangerous. Because the question always is, are you really doing this because it's such an important laudatory thing to do? Or, you know, between the human ability to rationalize anything and the human ability to lose control when you're angry, you put those two together, the righteous anger, and it can get totally out of control. Shimon and Levi, one way to understand what it was that they did was their anger and emotions about maybe their sister, and maybe not their sister, maybe they took it personally. Maybe it was they took personally what happened to them, and they, you know, portray it as we're being so defensive of our sister. That is what was the true motivating factor for them. Shimon and Levi were not really acting out of the care and concern for Dina per se. It was that they personally took an anger. What's the proof of this? That they weren't acting out of sibling loyalty? How do we know that Shimon and Levi were not acting out of sibling loyalty? Rabbi Rosenzweig points this out. Great, great point. Because what happens to one parsha later? Shimon and Levi, the paragons of sibling loyalty. Well, even one parsha after this. Yosef, what, sibling loyalty? They want to kill their brother and sell, and then they sell him into slavery? Not buying it. What really was happening with Shimon and Levi? In the moment in Parashas Vayishlach, they say, Hachazoni Yesach Tachosenu, and Yaakovinu can't say anything. But subsequent events reveal that was not really being done for the right reason. It was not the Kanoi and Pogenbo. They were angry. Our sister has been violated. It's a sin against us. They don't think from Dina's perspective. It was the sin against them. Their anger is what allows them to do. And that's why one parsha later, they can take Yosef, their own brother, ready to kill him. Exactly. It was the hatred. It was the anger. Now, they convinced themselves in Parshas Vayishlach that they were acting out of a righteous cause. And had that been the case, it would have been a separate story. But subsequent events demonstrate that that was not what they were about, as opposed to Pinchas. Pinchas takes, he's able to redeem the righteous anger, the real kinnah, and it's very, very hard to do. When is kinnah okay? If you can really be honest with yourself and be sure that you are doing this for the right reasons and not the reasons that you tell yourself. And if we look back to Yosef's klala, what does Yosef say? It is, as Yaakov say, it's so on point. He tells them, arur apam ki az, right? Their anger is the problem. Their anger is the problem. And what did I say one pasuk earlier? Ki ba'apam hargu ish. They killed the men. Rashi says, these are the men of Shechem. That's totally the pshat. They killed the men of Shechem in their anger. It wasn't principles. It was emotions that led to the killing. And that is terrible. Now, here's the kicker, right? What's the very next line in Yaakov's klala? Uver tzonam ikru shor. Who's the ox? Who's the ox that they hamstrung? Yeah, Yosef. Right, says Rashi. It's Yosef. It's Yosef. So what's the point? They killed for their sister? No. They killed because they were angry. And the proof is that 1 minute later, Yaakov says, uver tzonam, in their will. It wasn't anger this time. It was will. They wanted it. Well, they're rationalizing for Vayesha, for Yosef. No. They wanted to do it. And they did what they wanted to do, and they convinced themselves it's for good reasons. So in Vayishlach, it's Shechem and Chamor, which looks good. Vayeshev, it's Ikru Shor, they're going after Yosef, right? Now Pinchas, let's bring this home, I think, with one more fascinating Gemara in Zvachim, right? How Pinchas is able to really just, really put a bow on this, because it's great. In the moment, okay, so we're told then that the stories are similar. We have Shimon and Levi. We have Zimri and Pinchas. If we look at how things go subsequently, we see the Shevet Shimon does not do tshuva, right? The Shevet Shimon, which really was just susceptible to their own willpower, their ratzon in Parshas Vayishlach and in Parshas Vayechi, they're still falling to the will in Parshas Bala. They're sinning with the daughters of Midian. Pinchas, though, has done the tshuva because he's maintaining his integrity and he's acting out of true zealotry. But how do we know? How do we know that he's acting out of true zealotry? The test is going to be what happens in a moment when zealotry is not necessarily what is called for. So the next time we see Pinchas show up in Tanakh is in this end of Sefer Yehoshua. There's a whole episode where the 2.5 tribes who had fought with the Jews now go back the other side of the Jordan River. On their way back, they build this massive mizbeach, this massive altar on the other side of the Jordan River. The Jews find out about this, and they're horrified because it sounds like they're idol worshiping. But the minute you leave Eretz Yisrael, you build this random huge mizbeach, and they want to go to war. So they want to go to war. What happens? They send a delegation led by Pinchas, a fact-finding mission. Pinchas goes on the fact-finding mission. He finds the two tribes. Pinchas says, what are you doing? We barely survived Peor. We still have not been cleansed from Peor. And Pinchas is totally scarred by Peor. And so because Hashem is scarred by Peor. And now you're going to do this also? People say, no, this is Be'ach is not a Avodah Zarah. This is Be'ach is there for us to remember that we fought on the side of Eretz Yisrael, and it's there for Hashem. Okay, and Pinchas accepts it, and Pinchas brings it back to Bnei Yisrael. You read the story, and you're like, okay, it doesn't seem like the biggest deal. It doesn't. There was a misunderstanding. Pinchas goes, he clarifies the misunderstanding. It wasn't idolatry. It was Mizbeach for Hashem. He comes back, he tells him what's happening, and peace is restored. Says the Gemara in Zvachim. When, source number 12, when did Pinchas become a Kohen? So the simple understanding is the first line of the Gemara. Amar Lazar and Chanina, source 12, Lo niskayin Pinchas ad shehargel Zimri. Pinchas is a Gemara Kohen until he kills Zimri. Zichsev, Vaisa lo ul zaro acharav brisku nas olam. They're going to be Kohanim for all time. So if his sons are Kohanim, seemingly Pinchas is a Kohen. Rav Ashi disagrees. Rav Ashi Amar, no, he says, after Pinchas, his kids are Kohanim. He's still a Levi. When does Pinchas himself become a Kohen? Ad shesam shalom bein hashvatim. He has to bring peace between the shvatim to become a Kohen. Shenamar vayishma Pinchas haKohen usi aida reshei alfei Yisrael v'gom. That seemingly innocuous moment when Pinchas just finds out what happens and restores peace, that's what makes him a Kohen. Why? What's so exciting about that? The heroic moment of Zimri, I understand why that makes him a Kohen. The fact-finding mission? Whoop-de-doo. Who cares? What's the big deal? The answer is, the fact-finding mission, it wasn't so heroic in and of itself. That fact-finding mission demonstrated the integrity of Pinchas the last time around. If Pinchas was somebody who really acted out of rage and anger and, you know, this is a chance for me to lash out and a chance for me to take dramatic action. Normally, I have to go to my 9 to 5 and it's pretty boring. But I have a chance to go and take revenge and that gets me excited, gets me up in the morning. Then Pinchas would not have passed up the opportunity to do the same thing in Sefer Yehoshua. It is the fact that in Sefer Yehoshua, Pinchas is able to approach it calmly, rationally, reasonably. All of Bnei Yisrael want to go to war. He says, let's find out what's happening. Let's get the facts and let's calm everybody down. We see then when he passes up the easy opportunity for bad zealotry, everyone else wants to go to war. When he passes up the easy opportunity for bad zealotry, that demonstrates that back in Sefer Bamidbar, the zealotry was indeed being done for the right reasons. So you need to have the kinna and you have to have both. The peace for when peace, exactly. You have to have peace for when the peace is appropriate. You have to have kinah for when kinah is appropriate. What did the Gemara say? Who was Pinchas? He was the son of the Kenai ben Kenai. He's the son of Levi. And he's the son of the Meshav Chema ben Meshav Chema. He is the son, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen. Fusing the true zealousness, right? Where it's coming from a true desire to help Hashem. It's coming from true integrity. As long as that is fused with the underlying desire for peace whenever possible, that is what is going to create the potential for the Kohen Gadol. And then, by the way, for all time, the descendants of Pinchas, it's not just Aaron's descendants who are Kohen Gadolim, it is the family of Pinchas per se, which becomes the Kohen Gadol, right? So it's like Aaron was the man of peace. And then for the Kohen Gadol, the Dorei Doros, we need to sharpen that a little bit. We need to have men of peace who also can be men of zealousness. You know, we're just coming off of Hanukkah. If the Chashmonaim had just been men of Shalom alone, we never would have cleansed the Beis HaMikdash. We need men of people of Shalom who also can have the zealousness, but only if and when it is required. And so that is how Pinchas is able to take the legacy of Shimon and Levi, and he is able to redeem it. He's able to redeem the failing of his own ancestor, right? Levi's later activity demonstrated the failure of his moment, and that's why Yaakov says, Ki ba'apam Harguish uvirtzanam ikrushor. And then we have Pinchas. His subsequent shalom demonstrates that he really was bikan oas kenasi. His kina was that of Hashem. Okay, so Shkoa, we'll stop here. Really, thank you everybody so much for coming for this whole series. I really enjoyed it. I hope you did too. Just to take.